Howdy, welcome to Auto Hunters Drive the Bid podcast, powered by ClassicCars.com. I'm Diego Rosenberg, and with me is Derek Shakey.
Allegedly.
What does your wife say?
She goes with it.
Okay, fair enough. How's it going?
It's going all right, man. How are you doing?
I'm very good. I just need to work this in. Baba Booey.
Nice. You just went for it.
Yes.
I support that. I just went
for it. So let's start with the news.
Yes. So Bugatti has made a very special, and by special, I mean a one of one special edition of the Chiron, I guess is how you say it.
Not Chiron.
Well, that's how I was saying it. But then, you know, you go online and there's so many different pronunciations. But they made this literally a one off. And it is inspired by a classic Bugatti that the client had seen at a museum 20 years ago. And so for her 70th birthday this year, her husband decided to fly her to France to work on getting this custom car made. So she was working with one of the designers there from Bugatti's, I'm going to butcher this, Sur Mesure. Program. So basically like one-offs, individualization, all that. Anyway,
because Bugattis are not one-off individualized already.
Well, there's a lot of them that have been. I guess you could say to a certain extent they are a low volume manufacturer, but this is certainly an exception to that rule. And so as part of that, one of the Bugatti consultants flew to the Guggenheim Museum in Bilbao, Spain, because the Type 57 SC Atlantique was on display there. And of course, you know, the client was wowed by the color of that car when she saw it 20 years ago. So this Bugatti designer flew to the museum with a color swatch and, you know, wanted to see how it looked under different lighting conditions so they could match it for this custom car.
Which car do you think costs more?
The one on the left. Yeah. So according to my research, there were only four body shells produced. So the Type 57S and the SC, they were made between 1936 and 1938. And a really interesting detail about them was they were supposed to be made of magnesium. But at the time, late 30s, magnesium was hard to work with. It was difficult to weld. So they ended up just riveting the two sides together. And among other... Yeah, so you have that distinctive central spine. And among other owners is Ralph Lauren. He actually has one. He got it in the late 80s, and he had it restored. It was a process that took 9,600 hours. And he ended up winning Pebble Beach in 1990 with it.
I have to admit, the color looks pretty good in the new one, even though I'm not hot on Bugattis.
Mm-hmm.
I think this one's better looking than the last one, the Veyron.
You know,
the color looks great.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. And so they have some special touches on it as well. They have a sketch of the Atlantique under the rear wing, hand-drawn silhouette, I guess is a better term for it. And then on the inside, so Ettore Bugatti had brothers, and there was Jean Bugatti and then Rembrandt Bugatti, who was a sculptor and he worked with animals. So on the inside, they have embroidery on the headrests of a dancing elephant sculpture. They embroidered that.
Pangolin or anything like that?
No.
Okay.
No. but yeah, they have some special touches inside. Now, mechanically, it's the same. It's actually a Chiron Supersport. So it's mechanically, it's the same, meaning quad turbo, 8-liter W16, almost 1,600 horsepower, top speed. When you do the math, when you convert from kilometers per hour to miles per hour, it comes out to 273.
So is this lady going to be going to Circle K with this car?
Maybe. She took part in this sort of rally that they had through Colorado and maybe another state place recently.
This is the desert. So they got the car from Spain and flew it out here?
No. That one was on display there. So the Bugatti designer actually flew out there.
So how was this photo shoot set up? Do you have any idea?
No, I don't. But, you know, now that I think about it, what you said, it kind of makes sense. Maybe they flew the old one to the American Southwest as part of the rally. It would make sense, you know, because they had all these Bugatti owners meet up and drive. So it would make sense if they had that staged somewhere as part of a display.
I mean, why not? You have the money.
Oh, yeah. That's nothing but money. It's all telephone numbers.
Yeah. Thank you, Derek. So my news story is about the new Toyota Tacoma. Car and Driver just did a preview on it. I guess they got first impressions. It's got the standard one, which I think is called the SR, that trim level, is going to have a 2.0-liter 4 with 228 horsepower. And for all the ones above, it's 278 horsepower. The torque level, the torque has gone up from 52, has gone up by 52 to 317. So this four cylinder is more than the outgoing 3.56.
Oh, okay.
Which is not really a big feat because that's like 20 years old. there's going to be an 8-speed automatic that replaces the 6-speed.
Nice.
And there's also going to be a manual. Miles per gallon will also be increased across the board. You can get a coil spring suspension like the Tundra for those who want a smooth ride. That's, I think the suspension's for the rear. I'm not really, I don't recall for sure about that. There's also going to be a hybrid system offering 326 horsepower. And it'll be available for the TRD Pro and the Trail Hunter. So those are the two top off-road trim levels, as far as I know. The base price is going to be $32,995.
Okay.
And it's going to go up to $53,595 for the Tacoma Limited. So this is what it's going to look like. And it's probably going to be a hit. I know a lot of people have been waiting for this around the world for the most part. You know, this is one of the most popular and best loved vehicles around the world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and the pricing reflects that. I mean, even in the secondary market, these things hold their value.
Yeah, and I have to congratulate them. It's not as ugly as the last one. You know, like the past one or two facelifts have been a little bit too much. I mean, okay, it makes sense, let's say, how they look, but a little bit too much.
Yeah, there's certain vehicles these days that are a little overstyled.
Yeah, especially in the truck world. So, looks good, though.
I think that's the thickest bottom rim I've ever seen on a vehicle.
Yeah.
That is chonky.
It looks like the size of a club, like the thickness. It's like you don't need the club. You have the steering wheel already with it built in.
Oh, like the theft deterrent
device?
Yeah.
So that's my news for this week. So up next, we're going to do a quick take.
Or not so quick.
Sure.
Depending, we'll see.
The quick take that you're going to school me on something is this, again, Bugatti. Now, what's the name of this? This was the first of the revivals, right?
In a sense. Now, in the course of researching this, I learned something very interesting, and I figured you probably knew about it. So they stopped manufacturing in France in 1952. Right. And a weird, funny little fact about that is it was a company based in France originally. The founder, Ettore Bugatti, was actually born in Italy. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they stopped manufacturing in France in 62. In 1963, a very familiar name to you. Let's see here. In 63, Virgil Exner had a series of continuation models of, you know, famous manufacturers. So, you know, Duesenberg, Stutz, Packard, and of course Bugatti. So he made a concept, I guess, with the Bugatti badge on it, and nothing came of that. So flash forward decades later, there is a wealthy Italian vehicle importer, Romano Artioli. He bought the rights to Bugatti, and he became the head of the company in 1987. And of course, you know, being in Italy, he was able to draw on the talents of the local workforces, you know, people that had worked for Ferrari, De Tomaso, Lamborghini. So he got a group of them together and actually had this state-of-the-art facility built in Campo Galliano. And they called it the, it was nicknamed the Blue Factory. And they came up with this car right there, the EB110 GT. And then later there was a more powerful supersport version. It was EB110 because it was actually unveiled on Ettore Bugatti's 110th birthday, what would have been his 110th birthday in 1991. Price was about $350,000. And this had a similarity to the Veyron and the Chiron in that it was a quad turbo engine with all-wheel drive. Now, in this case, it was a 3.5-liter V12 and a 6-speed manual instead of a dual-clutch unit, obviously. And by the time the factory closed, about 1995, it was, unfortunately, it was just it was an ill-fated endeavor because there was, I think there was a recession at the time, so that had something to do with it. Just conditions kind of conspired against this, but by the time they had shut down production, they had made 95 EB110 GTs and less than 40 of the SS models.
I thought even back then these were kind of ugly, but they look almost normal compared with what they are building today.
Yeah, these are a lot more angular, definitely.
To me, it's the headlights, the placement of the headlights and how they look. I don't know. It looks like some trap door spider or something like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I could see what you mean. Yeah, you know, it's strange. It is a bit, I guess you could say, ungainly. In a way, it kind of reminds me of what they've done with the Chiron because, you know, you look at the Veyron and the Chiron next to each other and they're, you know, they're both, among other things, like top speed cars, right? But the Veyron has got that really, you know, chunky rear end. It's very rounded. But then you notice this taper to its successor. It's got that long tail look, which obviously helps with top speed. This kind of has a long nose look, at least from this angle.
This also seems like a regular car versus the new ones are kind of above and beyond.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the top speed is definitely a part of that. I'm curious what the price on this would be if you converted it to today's dollars. Certainly wouldn't be cheap.
500 maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I think last I saw is that, you know, these have obviously appreciated in value. So these might be, you know, million-dollar cars by now. I mean, it's been long enough. You know, I think this was in the same league as the XJ220. You know, it was short-lived. It was very ambitious. I mean, considering they created an entire factory just to build one car. I mean, well, now that I think about it, it's DeLorean-esque.
Very good. Thank you. So my quick take is going to be some Mopar special order colors.
Mm.
But it's special order in a not like, hey, I like this color on that Imperial. I want it available in my car. So this car is painted Omaha orange. It was a fleet car color. It was not a regular production color in the Plymouth series. Or Plymouth product line, rather. This car exists because a dealership, or let's say maybe a group of dealerships, I'm not really sure exactly, in California figured out that if they order 50 of a certain color, they would not have to pay extra for the special order color. So they ordered a batch of 50 of these orange Plymouths. I know there's also Barracuda. There may be other, but most of them, I think, are Roadrunners. So they did the same thing in 1969. I'm not saying this is one of those, but I'll tell you why in a second. In 1969, they chose the Chevrolet Rally Green color to do that, those dealerships in California. The paint code is a little bit different than the Chevrolet paint code, only because one company used lacquer and the other one used enamel.
Okay.
So, but otherwise, they copied Chevy Rally Green. Plymouth ended up making this a regular production color mid-year, or sometime in the model year. Just Plymouth, though, not Dodge. So this one, I think, is one of those. Now, on the data plate, it doesn't have a color code. It says it has one of the special order codes that's sometimes it may be 99, sometimes it's 97, 97E. I could be mixing things up. My friend Dan is much better versed in this than I am, but you get the idea. So I think this is one of the Plymouth ones versus the California ones, so to speak. Meanwhile, at Dodge, someone got jealous, and Dodge introduced a similar color that's coded F6. It's not Rally Green. It's their own concoction. Now, why did that happen? I don't know. My friend theorizes that Dodge wanted to get in on the act, but they did not want to use a Chevy color. But to me, at least, to my mind, it makes sense. Like, you have both cars in the same assembly line. Why not just use the same color? But that's not what happened. So this is Dodge's response in the spring, F6, which was just called Bright Green.
Oh, okay.
So versus Rally Green. So they're very similar, but they're a little different. Here's another Bright Green Dodge Charger Daytona. So just so you know, this setup for the six-pack cars is just a nice show display that someone came up with years ago. It works nicely because the hood is not hinged.
Mm-hmm.
So this displays the hood and the engine.
Canopy hood, I guess.
Yep.
Interesting. Yeah, that's, so, you know, I've been known to like a green car too, and yes, that's an attractive shade for a lighter green. I usually go for darker, but that looks pretty good.
And I forgot to upload it here, but I know a guy in Michigan who found a 70 that was special ordered in one of these greens.
Oh, okay.
So it looks interesting because you're not used to seeing a 70 in one of these colors, but it is.
Hmm.
So it needs a restoration, but you can, you know, imagine it.
Yeah.
So our theme for this week is, what was it? Obscure trivia?
Random car trivia. Random
car trivia. That's the word I was looking for. So I'm going to start off with this. So in 1957, the industry started feeling that the states were starting to change their laws regarding headlights. So Chrysler offered their cars, at least the Imperial, the Chrysler, the DeSoto, were available with two headlights or four headlights. You can see this DeSoto right here has two headlights. If you order from a state where they had it approved, you could get the four headlights. Okay. The DeSoto Adventurer is the only car in the DeSoto line that was only available with four headlights the whole model year. The reason for that is that it was introduced mid-year. So by the time it was introduced, all 50 states had approved. Actually, let's say 48 states. This is 1957. All 48 states had approved or updated their headlight laws. So when you see a DeSoto Adventurer, which were always gold or white with gold or black with gold, they all have quad headlights, but a lot of DeSotos don't, a lot of Chryslers don't, several Imperials don't.
I mean, from those two angles, it looks like the quads was the way to go.
I think the quad looks good, but I mean, you know, from the era, you see a lot of cars with two headlights and it works fine. But the Adventurer, the new fancy performance model, only available with four headlights due to its introduction in the middle of the year.
Yeah. The timing worked in that way.
Exactly. So next, some trivia from you.
Yes. Yeah. So you and I discussed this before. I was going through some old Packard brochures a few weeks ago, and I came across, you know, a lot of it, there's like marketing speak and just, you know, terms you're used to seeing most of the time, albeit, you know, phrased differently because it's what, more than 80 years ago. But one term I came across that really had me, you know, boggled my mind was hassocks. And I thought, well, that's a weird one. So I looked it up and they liked using it. They used it not only in this brochure, but in another one that I saw, and I'm sure others through the years. And hassock is another word for an ottoman or a footrest. Just a very fancy, I guess, antiquated term for it. Yeah. Yeah, so you get that nice pile carpet and then a pair of hassocks.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. It's just like a completely foreign word to me.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I
mean,
I would think they're like pig knuckles if you said, like, you know, you want some hassocks?
Like ham hocks.
Exactly.
I think it rolls off the tongue easier if you put on a monocle. Yeah.
Or grow a beard and call it a Cossacks.
Oh.
I'm probably mispronouncing it. Cossacks.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Makes me think of GoldenEye, the Aliens, Cossacks. Yeah.
So next on the trivia, here we have a 1958 Mercury brochure page, and they're talking about the new engine. They got a new 430 cubic inch engine. And right there on the corner, it's 400 horsepower. 430. Three two-barrel carburetors. This is the first engine in the American market and presumably the world to produce 400 horsepower or more. It wasn't the Chrysler 300 letter series. It was Mercury. And we actually had one of these on classiccars.com journal that was for sale. It was listed on Classic Cars, of course, and it was just 58 Park Lane. And you can see the Star Wars air cleaner here. And you can see the screws for the carburetor.
Now, why do you call it a Star Wars air cleaner?
That's what I call it. I don't know if that's what they call it. The air cleaner for the 67 Buick Grand Sport, they call it the Star Wars air cleaner. And it just reminded me of this.
Oh, okay.
Or this reminded me of that. They're different, but it's just like some kind of interesting air cleaner. So this is one of those 400 horsepower engines, supposedly. Wow.
Dang, that's healthy, very healthy for back then.
Yeah, absolutely. So the top engine for the Chrysler 300D in 58 was 390 horsepower from a 392 Hemi. Mm-hmm. This one had 430 cubic inches, 400 horsepower.
Yeah, and then you think about, like, you know, the Mustang Cobra. They made, you know, obviously it was in the 90s, you know, it was a high performance version of the Mustang, but that didn't hit 390 until 03, 04 with a supercharger.
Yeah, but they rated horsepower different back then. Then it was gross, and you're talking about net, so it's a little bit different.
Yeah, I'm just going off of the number, but yeah, you're right. Yeah, different systems.
So now some trivia for me, courtesy of you.
Yeah. So I came across this a few months ago, I guess. And, you know, a lot of car manufacturers, especially luxury companies, make a big deal about, oh, this car is quieter than before. We've added sound insulation, whatever. And that's obviously a big deal. You know, if you're in a high-end luxury car, especially like a Rolls-Royce Ghost, you want to feel a certain level of isolation from the outside world while you're driving. The problem with the development of the new Ghost that came out for the 2021 model year was that engineers made it too quiet. So in their early testing, they had people in the car and they had paid attention to like so many little things, like the sound coming out of the air vents, just these little spots. And they ended up putting 220 pounds of sound insulation, like even in the tires, I mean, just a variety of places. And people, it was so quiet that the people that were riding in the car were disoriented by it. Like it kind of freaked them out because what they were not hearing, that near silence, did not match up with the movement of the car. So it was disorienting. It was off-putting. And engineers also found that little things like a person's breathing or their pants rubbing against the leather seats could just be like unnerving to people. So what they did was they found certain sounds that the car made, and they tried to make them harmonize together into what they called a soft whisper. So there's something about the seat frames, the sound coming from those, like they tried to harmonize those with, you know, another sound the car made. And then, and the thing was, they wanted to, you know, leave the sound there to some extent, but yeah, have it harmonize with others that might be occurring. So they did their jobs too well. So they actually had to, in a way, add sound back to the cabin.
So is it like a major seventh chord or something like that? What kind of sound do they do in harmony?
Oh, that I don't know. I think I read something about the brown note. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, it's very interesting, you know, science and all the development they put into these cars. I mean, the fact that they not only discovered that, but they found ways to kind of remedy the situation just shows you how much development they put into these cars.
And I'm still not interested in it.
That's all right.
So no one would be able to get away with this today, but in 1957.
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
58. Studebaker named their downmarket trim level, the Scotsman. Because, of course, I have no idea about this, but the Scottish are known for being frugal.
That was news to me.
Yeah. So, painted bezels, painted trim here. You know, I think probably there was one windshield wiper and the second one was an option. I believe they're vacuum operated. I think there's cardboard in the back of the seats. I mean, very, very down market.
Yeah.
Perfect for a Scotsman.
According to them, yeah.
Scotswoman, I don't know. But I bet she's very fair. So they had a station wagon. They had a four-door sedan and a two-door sedan. This one I could tell is a 57 from the rear taillights versus the 58. I don't know if they're all available with a 6. It's possible they're available with an 8. I don't think so. I don't imagine so for something so down market.
And you know, frugal.
I mean, it's basically getting the cheapest one you have and decontenting it. That's basically what they did. So it's kind of a curiosity. I think it's kind of cool in its own way. You know, there's definitely appeal for getting the cheapest one. Usually it's for lightweight, especially if you want to get a big engine.
Yeah. I mean, there's some people, they don't care what's in it already because they're going to modify it, you know?
In this case, this is probably a full-size car that didn't cost much more than a Volkswagen Beetle.
Oh, okay.
I imagine that's what they were trying to do. So, up next, it's your little trivia thing.
Oh, yeah. So I came across this a while ago, too. I was researching, you know, the 67 Camaro, and I've, of course, looked at the brochure. And in the brochure, they said one of the available items was, I want to get this right here, that you could order with the Chevrolet Delco stereo tape system came an 80-minute tape program narrated by Lorne Greene, who played Ben Cartwright on Bonanza. And he was also, and I didn't know this at all, he was also in the 1970s TV version of Battlestar Galactica.
Now, I know Lorne Greene from the 70s and 80s, but I don't remember from where. I don't think it was Battlestar Galactica, but from something. Do you remember what he was on, or was he doing TV commercials for something? You know, like Art Linkletter used to do commercials for something. A lot of these older actors, I'm familiar with who they are from commercials. You know, like I think someone was a Maxwell House spokeswoman, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Lauren Green, I don't really know, remember where I know where he's from, but I know who he is.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure he did commercials too. But those were, I guess, two of his biggest credits is Bonanza and Battlestar Galactica.
And yeah. And Bonanza is before my time, but I know what it is. Battlestar Galactica came out when I was a kid, so I remember it, but I was too young to see what it was. And it seems to have been forgotten.
Well, and then they revamped it, I think, in like the 90s. I want to say Edward James Olmos was in the newer version of it. I think that's what it was.
So I might also point out here, this badge means that this car is a big block. So it's got a 396.
Nice.
So 396 convertible, 1967 is quite rare.
Oh, okay.
And this one, I think, is also a rally sport because of this trim here.
Hmm.
So, well, thank you.
Yeah.
I'll have to look up Lauren Green. So it's time for our Auto Hunter picks. I picked this 1955 Chevrolet Bel Air, two-tone cream and white. It ends on the 18th of December, which is a Monday. This one is equipped with a 350 and an automatic transmission. You can see the interior's got reupholstered. I mean, let me back up. It's not reupholstered. It looks like a bench seat from another vehicle, perhaps. Mm. Otherwise, and you can see they has a floor shifter.
Yeah, B&M, it looks like.
And otherwise, you know, the dashboard itself looks relatively stock aside of the accessories and the under dash air conditioning. It's got some mag wheels.
Dual exhaust.
It has those aftermarket taillights.
You get looks like a scratch guard for the fuel door.
Yeah. So in some ways, this is a very typical 55 that you see, but sometimes it's also hard to beat a 55 Chevy. You know, a lot of people like them and they're good looking cars.
Yeah, that's a classic in two ways. You know, it's obviously one of the Tri-5s, but also it's got a more modern 350.
Mm-hmm. Now, how modern, I don't know. I mean, 350 came out in 1967.
Yeah.
So, and a small block is a small block. So, that ends next Monday, the 18th. Actually, is the 18th Monday? Did I put that in my notes? Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Okay. Just want to be sure.
So, enough time for, you know, maybe if...
A viewer can check it on autohunter.com.
Yeah. And if somebody wins the auction, maybe... You know, the delivery company could get a move on and get it delivered in time for Christmas.
Or we can invite them for the podcast.
That too.
Yep. So your Auto Hunter pick.
Yes. So this is a 75 to be exact, Mercedes-Benz 450 SL. So 70s color scheme right there. It's a Byzantine gold over a brown MBTEX vinyl interior. This one ends the same day as yours, Monday, December 18th. According to the seller, this has 90,000 miles on it since new. In the past, it was owned in California and Washington. And as the name implies, this has a 4.5-liter V8. At that time, it was paired with a 3-speed automatic. I think in 1981, I want to say, they switched over to a 4-speed. This has had some work done on it in the past. In 2011, it had a major service, about $3,700 worth. So the air conditioning compressor was replaced, things like the valve gaskets, the front subframe mounts, and belts and plugs were replaced. And in 99, the retractable cloth top was replaced as well.
You can tell this is an American version because of the federalized bumpers. I don't know why people add this stuff. This isn't factory, right? Those chrome highlights on the arches.
That I'm not sure of. But yeah, I have seen it on some of these. And I guess it makes sense with the chrome wheels on this, just to coordinate with them.
And I'm going to guess the chrome wheels aren't correct. Like, they're probably like this, I don't know, matte silver gray.
You know, I think I might have seen those before. They look kind of familiar. But, you know, the majority of them, they have... What is it? I think for those with the ghillie deckle, the manhole cover type wheels, or the mm-hmm. Bunce, the bunt wheels, but I think I've seen these on Mercedes before. But
for sure, I mean, it looks good. It's just it's for someone who is more tolerant to ostentatiousness.
Yeah, these definitely have a flash to them. It's not for everyone, but this does stand out. And along with the purchase, obviously, it comes with the body-colored hardtop. It also comes with service records and an owner's manual.
Does it come with that man?
If you ask him nicely, maybe he'll make the trip down.
Yeah, he looks busy with his phone right now. Most of the ones I see of these are like from the 80s. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't see many of the earlier ones.
Yeah, we've run a lot of these R107 SLs on Auto Hunter. But yeah, I think the majority of them have been in the 80s.
Very good. Thank you. Up next, we have this Ford Mustang. I have to admit, I did not take note on it as far as like what year it is. I think it's a 66 based on the grill. Maybe this is a hint too. I'm not really sure. I kind of just assumed I knew what I was going to be talking about, and now I'm presented with this. So hopefully I'm not goofing, but this also expires on the 18th. Next Monday is when the auction ends. This is just your basic Mustang coupe with 206. Let me clarify, 200 cubic inch, six cylinder. It's got a 3-speed manual and Anson mags. Although these look like more modern versions than the vintage ones, but I could be wrong. You can see the interior. It's got the pony interior. You can see a 3-speed shifter there. Here's the straight six, 200 cubic inches. So a very typical Mustang out of the many that they built. Maybe this one has a little bit more panache, so to speak, than others due to the wheels. So... again, this one expires next Monday, the 18th.
It shows you like how certain terms roll off the tongue versus others. Because like if you say 350 V8, like it's people automatically know. But when you say 206, it's like for a sec, you know, split second, you got to think about it. But yeah, red Mustang, you know, and a manual. That's a classic combo.
I mean, this is a nice car for someone to drive every day, you know, a classic, and it's not going to break the bank.
Yeah.
And parts are plentiful.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's aftermarket support.
Well, even just, stock replacement stuff. I guess that's what you meant by aftermarket support. To tell you the truth, I don't know if Ford offers anything for these vehicles anymore. You know, I would think that there is a market for parts. Why doesn't Ford get into it? But maybe not.
Yeah, maybe one of these days. Yeah. It seems like a lot of companies have responded to the need for restoration parts. You know, they have their own restoration programs. So maybe one of these days Ford will do that formally.
Yeah. So... up next is your final Auto Hunter pick for this week, and it is...
not quite a Ford, but part of the FOMOCO family. This is a 2019 Lincoln Nautilus Reserve all-wheel drive. So Reserve sounds like a fancy name, and it fits what's in this vehicle, because the more I looked into the details of this vehicle, the more I thought, wow, this is a nice package. It's the blue diamond metallic exterior over a cappuccino leather interior. Front row is heated and ventilated seats. I think they're also heated and ventilated, and then the outboard seats on the second row are heated steering wheel, all-wheel drive, of course. There's a wireless charging pad. And what was a big deal to me was this has the 13-speaker Revell audio system. So I had never heard of that company until Lincoln started partnering with them. And of course, they offered a Revell audio system in the Continental as well.
So here's a question. What did this model used to be called before it was Nautilus?
Oh, gosh. They had that alphanumeric scheme. So
that's what it was before.
But I'm trying to remember. It was MK something, maybe MKX.
And this is the equivalent of what Ford?
Maybe, there's the Corsair, There's the
Ford is a mix of Corsair.
No, the Lincoln Corsair. Okay. So that's a bigger one. This is maybe, this might be their equivalent, their corporate cousin to the Edge, maybe.
Okay.
But yeah, just a nice looking package.
And what is Nautilus besides a sea animal?
That's also a, I want to say a Patek Philippe, sports watch.
Yeah, but I can't imagine they're naming it after a watch.
What
are they naming it after? I mean, it seems kind of a strange name. They're not naming it after something at the gym, are they?
I wouldn't imagine they are. Let's see here. Okay, yeah. First result is the sea creature. So maybe they're just trying to evoke images of, the ocean, the water.
So what's Corsair? Isn't that an airplane? I mean, I really don't know. I mean, it used to be an Edsel name.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah,
that Edsel Ranger, Pacer, Corsair, and Citation.
It's funny that all of those names got recycled into other manufacturers. I guess they were up for grabs.
Mm-hmm. So, anyway, this expires on the 18th as well?
Good question. So, this one, viewers out there, you have until Friday, December 15th to bid on this Lincoln Nautilus.
Okay. Coming up soon.
That's right.
So, and it is this, what did you call it, Jubilee Blue?
Blue Diamond Metallic. Metallic.
I was way off.
I was thinking they should call it Blue Diamond Phillips, but I guess that would be a lawsuit waiting to happen.
Yeah. Well, who knows? I mean, it's satire. They'll just claim that. So anyway, I think that is it for the podcast. Thank you very much for your nifty trivia and other stuff. Thank you very much for watching, folks, and listening. Press that like button on YouTube if you are watching this, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, everyone.